Welcome to Unpacking with Jennifer. I'm your host, Jennifer Sattel. This is the podcast where we get real about all the things, from raising kids and managing family life to balancing work, endless activities, and somehow keeping your home organized through it all. As a mom and a professional home organizer, I know firsthand how overwhelming it can be. But here's the thing, organization isn't just about pretty containers and tidy shelves. It's about creating systems that work for your busy life, so you can spend more time enjoying your family and less time searching for lost shoes. Each week, we'll dive into everything from decluttering your home to simplifying your schedule, handling the chaos of kids' activities, and finding that elusive balance between work and family life. Because let's be honest, we are all trying to figure it out. So if you're ready to unpack the mess, both inside and out, let's jump into this week's episode. Welcome back to my show. Today is such a great episode. I have a super special guest. Not only is she a badass mom, but she is also a psychotherapist, which she has never evaluated me yet. So I'm going to say she's awesome and amazing and wonderful, but she may dive into me and maybe, you know, I might have to change my tune a little bit. Gary Connell is here. Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Hi. It's so, you know, it's so exciting. First of all, I love talking by myself. I do. I mean, I can tell stories till I die. But it's really exciting to have somebody on the show. It's very exciting diving into different areas of, you know, marketing or psychotherapy or whatever. It could be real estate, whatever it is. And not only do I want to support you just as a mom and just as somebody that, you know, is so amazing, but also I want to support what you do and your business. And we're going to dive into that. But it's really nice having conversations with somebody and just kind of getting to know them in a different capacity. Now, how I know her is she actually reached out to me a few years ago. I would say, what, about 3 years ago, you think?
I think maybe even longer.
I think maybe even longer, too. And I, you know, for help. And it was great. It was wonderful. I met her and it was fantastic. And I knew what she did. I know now some of that is kind of shifting, and we're going to talk about that in a hot minute. But I like to start with how I, when I see her, this is the story that I think of. And it's so, it's not a personal story. It's just a very funny story. So when I met her, the one project she wanted to work on was her bedroom. It was her closet. It was her bedroom. And that was great because I love closets. Great. And I'm kind of telling her, she was a little, I could tell, she had actually told me, if I remember correctly, she kind of said she was a little nervous or a little anxious. You know, people don't know what you're coming into. And you know, like I said, it's a vulnerable situation sometimes. So she was just asking some just normal questions like, how do we, what's the process, blah, blah, blah. And so I was telling her, like, do what we do. I'm going to do, you know, we're going to pull everything out, whatever, whatever. So I'm like, and if you want to tell me stories about every piece of clothing that you can, or your shoes or whatever, you can. And you looked at me and you're like, people do that? And I was like, oh yeah, people tell me things, a lot of things. And it goes in my brain and I marinate it. And then when I leave, it's gone. And you're like, people really do that, or something along those lines, right? So as we're going through, we're like maybe on shoes or something. And this is what I remember. And I don't know if I have exact verbiage, but she's telling me like about these shoes she wore to a wedding or something. And she's like, and they really hurt my feet. And I'm like, and then she's like, yeah. And then I tried to wear them another time. And you started to give me like a 30 second, maybe to a minute story about why you were going to get rid of these shoes. And then you're like, oh shit, people really do this, like without even knowing. And in my opinion, it's a way of saying goodbye to something, or maybe just kind of tell it like, hey, this is what you're telling yourself, why you need to get rid of it now. But at the time, it was just funny because you're like, people do that? And then you're like, oh shit, I'm doing that right now, telling you about these shoes I'm going to get rid of, like you care or whatever. And it just made me laugh. And I tell people that, like, you talk about whatever you need to, getting rid of stuff. But that is how I met you. But that is not who you are. That is not all of the things. You're amazing. You're wonderful. You have a thousand things to talk about.
And Jennifer, I have to say, since I've known you, it's been really fun to watch you grow and watch how you've changed. And,
oh,
you know,
thank you.
You started this podcast and is kind of solo, but now you're interviewing people. That's a whole separate skill. It's really great.
Thank you. It's really exciting, and I enjoy it so much. I just love talking about things that I see. Everybody has a million stories during their day. Obviously, mine's a little, you know, all over the place, going to clients' houses and organizing, and yours is, you know, you have a million stories too, and people want to sometimes hear it so they can relate to it or understand how maybe you handle it versus they don't know, or for myself too. I try to help people, and I know you do it in a different capacity. And so let me ask you this. You work part-time.
I do. I work in a hospital part-time.
And you own a business.
And I do own a business, yes.
And I want you to tell me all of that stuff. I want you to tell me two things. Tell me about it. And then I want you to tell me how you balance that. And I know that you are a mom. And you have two daughters, and they're in elementary age, yes?
Yes.
Yes. So your hands are full, and full of probably them fighting going to bed at night, and probably homework and trying to get them to do their homework, maybe. I don't know. Am I touching on the right topic?
All of that.
And yeah. In all of that, you also work at a hospital. Busy. And then you have your own business that you're you know, diving into and have been diving into. And it's really getting, it's going and it's kicking butt and it's taking names. And talk about that.
Sure. So I'm a licensed clinical social worker. And in social work, we are trained to work in three levels. Micro practice, which is like individual one-on-one. Meso practice, which is like systems. And then macro practice, which is policy. Laws and things. And so to get the most satisfaction out of being a social worker, I find that I really want to participate in all three aspects of my training. And I enjoy all of it. And I think there's a lot of overlap between sitting with someone one-to-one and really understanding the impacts of their family and of their education and of their community, and also thinking about how they're impacted in a like more broader way, things that feel really out of touch that affect our lives, policy and laws and bigger systems. So it's all, you got to get to it all. And we only have one lifetime. Don't you wish you had like 500 years?
I know. And yeah. It goes so fast. And So you do that as your part-time?
In the hospital, part-time.
I mean, I say part-time. I know it's a lot. When I say part-time, but it is. Mm-hmm. You go there, you deal more on the social work kind of day-to-day. Yes. Is that how that works?
So in the hospital, it's like putting out fires and responding to emergencies. People aren't expecting to have things happen, or sometimes things are planned and then they need more help. And so we're there in the hospital to facilitate that. I work with new moms in maternal nice. maternal wellness. And then I also do follow up with high-risk infants. So when there's extremely low birth weight or a medical incident that happens at birth, we follow up with those babies to make sure their development is on track.
Oh, I didn't even know that. That's amazing.
I love my work.
You do.
But hospitals can be the interdisciplinary teams. There's doctors, there's nurses, there's administrators. It's not without strain. And for the last 6 months, our social work union has been in an unfair labor practice strike with the employer. So I haven't been going to work, and yet I'm working so hard to be able to go to work.
Yes.
And have conditions that are equitable for our patients and for providers to be able to have power in their voice. And the power is in our numbers. So it's such hard work, and I learned so much from my other social workers. And doing individual therapy, you get to take everything that you know and try to sit with another person and listen with such intention that you can make it useful and understand them. And it's a really wonderful practice, and it takes practice every single day, and we get better at it.
And I'm sure the people that you deal with, other social workers you work with, are just a wealth of knowledge. And every day you're a sponge, even things that you think you maybe already knew a little bit about, and then they'll take you to another level, and you just feed off of that, I believe. That just seems like how you would be, like to me. Like you would just take all that information and then just make it your own, you know? That's how I would feel. I mean, that's how I would feel. I don't know how you would feel, but you are very passionate about what you do. That is one thing I know, without a doubt. Tell me the other aspect of your, you know, you're at the hospital. When you're not at the hospital, you're at an office.
I work in an office. It's in San Fernando Valley, and I have a really diverse practice. I like to work across development, so I'll see young kids and I'll see older adults.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And it is interesting to know, you know, the 70-year-old, what is that inner 8-year-old like inside of her? And when you work with an 8-year-old, you know the trajectory is going to adolescence and launching. And so you hold that too in the work that I do in the more micro practice, the individual psychotherapy and work with families.
And you're in a networking group. Is that how people can find you? Or are you, is that how it works, you know, in hospitals or in your insurance, right? You go to networking and they kind of point you, you obviously, but how do you get people?
Referrals. Yes. For private practice, people find me on their own. A lot of it is word of mouth. Mm-hmm. But I find that that online directories, it's hit and miss.
Mm-hmm. So not really beneficial. It's all the word of mouth and referrals.
It really is. And you do the mommy groups on Facebook and the networking. It's hard in psychotherapy because it's a more intimate service. And so people really like to know, like, well, I saw this person and they had a good outcome. And so then I'll go to you.
They seemed okay when they left you.
So exactly. Exactly.
That makes absolute sense. Because, I mean, you know, you're not seeing a dime a dozen of you when there's 10,000 organizers of me. So it is, you know, people refer me, right? And that's great and wonderful. And actually, my business is almost solely referral based now. But it's a little different. Like you're such a small niche. It's not small, but in the big picture, and you want those referrals and you want those word of mouths, which is great if people are coming to you, and that's wonderful. How long have you been actually doing that in the office, in your own office?
In my own office, that started about 3 years ago. And that was like a relaunch of a private practice that I had started back in 2012.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
So you did this in 2012.
Yeah, it takes a couple of times to get things right.
Oh, yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
There was a lot of life that happened in between. And now I'm not going anywhere. Like, I am dug in. The name is on the lease.
The blood, I signed it in blood. I pricked my finger. I cut my hand.
Exactly. And I'm about to start a more intensive training program because we have to do ongoing continuing education because the field is always new information and different things. And so that's going to, I think, solidify and root me even further where I am.
That's great. So when you deal with older people versus the 8-year-olds, and let's say you go, because as we know, I'm asking this as more of like just how my brain works, is do you feel that sometimes dealing with older people, knowing that, I mean, I don't want to say that older people then turn into kids again, the some of the areas, right, you know, needing help, and, you know, it's a full circle thing, right? So do you see, is that difficult, like to see, like, are you helping them when they're older? Like, are the same issues, or is it they're diminishing and you're trying to, like, I don't know how it works. So I'm just asking, like, how does that work with older people versus kids?
It's a really good question. And there's an old, like, trope in psychotherapy that you can't use it with people who are older than 50. And that is so not true. We can always learn new things. We have amazing understanding that our brains have plasticity. That means we never stop learning. And there's always an opportunity to experience things and experience our life in a different way.
Really? All right. So, see, I mean, that's what I love about, because I could just pick your brain and all the things. Because I always say I want to get my master's in psychology, which I've told you about, in behavioral psychology is where I think my passion is down the road and whatever that road leads to. Again, another, I wish I had 10 more lives because there's 400 things I want to do. One of them is not work and travel the world. That's one of my lives would be that, just travel every day, all day, every day. And Charlotte would be with me and we would just home, you know, teach her as we went. And I'd be rich and I would just travel and not have to worry about anything. And then I want to be a psychiatrist and I want to still do organizing and I want to do, you know, it's like, how do you do it all? How do some of these people do it? Some people really do a broad spectrum of stuff if they aren't sure in the beginning and then they find their niche, which, I mean, you have it. It's locked down. It's your jam.
But the most exciting lifetime is where you're collecting like beads and stringing them along of experiences and stories. And what a privilege we can make a living doing that too. It's not easy, but it's certainly well worth it.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. This question, I don't know. I feel like you and I talked about it just in general, and I'm going to ask you it. I guess it's not really asking your answer. I just want to see your feeling about it, and we did touch on it, so I'm bringing it up again because I thought it was a absolute great talking point. Two, actually, there's two, is why is it hard for us to ask for help? Why do you think that is? Why do you think that is?
So that's such a good question. And it's one that I spend a lot of time thinking about, right? And I think it always comes back to we've all been in the position where we needed something and we didn't get it. And so it's a risk, right? You have to really say, would you do this for me? Or would you allow this to be present is something I need, right?
Do you personally have trouble asking for help?
It is always shifting and always changing, and it like happens in new ways. It's like, oh, I thought I got that the first time, and then it comes up again.
Yeah, yeah. I have a hard time. I have a hard time asking for help with certain things, bigger picture things, I think maybe, but. I don't know. We kind of mentioned it. It's just, yeah, it is hard. And you want to ask for help because you're like, this is what my support system is for, or the people around you, or even work. I mean, whoever's in your life around you, if you ask them, chances are they're going to help you. But you're always, I'm always afraid. Maybe I shouldn't say we. Like, I'm always afraid. What if they say no? Or what if, you know, you have this grand idea and you kind of, you know, whatever you want to ask for help for. And then they say no. And then you feel like, well, that dream is now done. And it's like, well, that's one person. And I'm not talking about the day-to-day help because that's hard for me too. Mm-hmm. Like people are like, well, I can go get, I'm like, no, it's okay. I don't worry. I don't want to inconvenience you.
You don't want to bother anybody.
I don't want to bother anybody.
Right.
And it's like, well, if they're offering or if they say, hey, I know you're busy working. Like I have, you know, one of Charlotte's friends, her mom and dad are, you know, they're very helpful, but every once in a while she'll say, hey, I'm at the school. Do you want me just to grab Charlotte for you? And I'm just like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
And I reciprocate, you know, whatever, but I always, we'd be like, oh my God, that would actually really help me. Do I say yes? Do I say no?
Mm-hmm. But we can't do everything, right? Everybody has their limits. And so I am not great at volunteering at my kid's school. But when the students from my kid's school are in the hospital or come into the outpatient clinic, pediatrics, I am there for them. And so I feel like, you know, you're part of the community, part of the world, and there is that trade-off. And you have to trust that the part that I'm doing is worthy, it's valid, it's enough. And it's amazing when you can take a step into that faith, what results you see.
That's true. It's taking a step into believing that it's going to happen. Or that it can happen. I have a story in one of my closest friends, one of my best friends, her name is Erica. And when Charlotte was first born, Erica was really at the hospital. Like I did it. I mean, she was so helpful. Like I cannot repay her. I mean, there's not enough hugs. There's not enough Starbucks or booze. she just is amazing. She was amazing. Like, she came home with David and I, with Charlotte from the hospital. Like, she did all this. And we were struggling with Charlotte sleeping at night. Terrible, ridiculous for like the first 4 months, like shoot me in the face. Like, just, I cried every night. It was terrible. And one night randomly she calls me and, I don't know. I think Charlotte was maybe like 2 months old. And I think probably she saw me and took pity on my bags under my eyes that were the size of the earth. But she randomly just called me. It was like 7 o'clock on like a Saturday. I will remember this unless hopefully I never get dementia. And she's like, "Hey, Jen." And you know, she has a son at the time. She just had a son. Now she has a son and daughter, but she's like, "I'm dropping, you know, my son off at the grandparents to spend the night or whatever. Why don't I come over and you and David sleep, and I'll go in the guest room with Charlotte, bring the bassinet in there." And I started crying and I was like, "Absolutely not. You're not doing that. Like, if you're taking Isaac, I'm sure you have stuff to do." So I started telling her, she's like, "Well, I just asked you." And I was like, "No, I can't inconvenience like that. She sleeps so terrible." And I kind of was like, maybe, I don't know what the reason was. It was just tears and like, no way. And she goes, "I'm going to drop him off in about 20 minutes. Call me back within the next half hour." Because she was in the area. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Okay." And David's like, "What was that about?" And I told him, and he looked at me. He's like, "Why in the hell would you not say okay?" And I was like, I can't ask her to do that. Like, I can't. And he's like, "You're not. She's calling you and saying, like, I'll take Charlotte in her bassinet." She was still so little. She was still in her bassinet. "And I'll sit with her in the guest room, all the things that she needs. I will get up with her." And I'm like, "Should I say yes?" And he's like, "Say yes." And I'm sobbing. I remember just blubbering, sobbing. And he's like, "Jennifer, we will never be better if we don't get some rest, like a good night's sleep." So I call her back. I'm sobbing, sobbing, sobbing. And I'm just like, "Thank you so much." I'm crying because I couldn't believe like what a generous thing that was. But I will tell you, David can sleep standing up. But I remember sleeping, I think, 14 hours.
You were so tired.
Oh, my God. I was so tired. I honestly believe it was between like 13 and 14 hours. Because by the time it was like 9 o'clock, it was like 10 something. I never heard anything. David slept like another 5 hours, but he also sleeps like he's dead. I remember waking up again, crying, thanking her because I felt like a new person. I literally felt like all the film was off my face. I just felt alive, and I still thank her. Not all the time, but I remember when you did that, I will never forget it. It was just one, you know, my mom, of course, helped and stuff, but this is my mom wasn't there, and she just randomly, and I was like, why did I make, I mean, I made it like a half hour ordeal. It could have been like a, "Are you sure? Okay, great."
But exhaustion surpasses your capacity to receive. And so we need help. We need a house, a spouse. We need a friend to not just take us by one hand, to take us by two. And say, "This is what I can offer you. Please take it."
Yeah. People have done some really amazing things, but that was, I think, the moment that she did it at the moment it needed to be done, because I'll tell you, her sleep didn't get better for a bit, but it eventually did. But I was like a new person. Even now, I could still get like teary-eyed, I was so thankful. And it was something that was so, she just was like, "I'll just do this." And I was like, "I can't," you know, like she didn't ask me to build a house. Like I was just like, she's like, "I'll do it. If I don't get sleep, then I don't get sleep for one night."
And Jennifer, you let her be the hero in your story.
Yeah. And she is and was the hero. And I have to tell you, it still gives me teary eyed because I just remember that feeling when I opened my eyes. First of all, I was like, "Oh my God, Charlotte's dead," because I didn't hear anything and I slept so long. And second of all, when I realized, "Oh wait, Erica's here," I was like, looked at the clock and I'm like, "Oh my God," because it was just so hard. I felt like I was a new human, and she just made a really big impact with that for me. Another question I want to ask you, and I believe we touched on, is explain to me mom guilt. Explain to me what you think about mom guilt. Do you have mom guilt?
It's not possible to be in tune with all of the needs and all of the lack in all of the wishes and not feel like some part of you isn't rising to the occasion, even though we're doing the best that we can.
100%. Now, let me ask you this. When you're in your office, are your hours a little bit later? Like, do you miss any of the girls dinner or bedtime or anything like that? Is it that late? I don't know.
Yeah. So I do mornings and my husband does pickups and he's really good with homework too.
Which is a benefit because homework with Charlotte and me versus homework with Charlotte and David, two different beasts. And I like her with David better than I like when she is with me.
And the way that they teach math now is really different.
That's what I'm hearing. We're not there yet. I think we're going to be there next year. But that's what I hear. They're like, it's a whole new like world. And they're like, why? Why did you reinvent the wheel? Like it was, you know, I don't know. But
I had to take statistics. That was as far as I went in college math, like three times before I could get through it. So I'd start and I'd stop, I'd start and I'd stop. And with Dad, they only have to do it once.
Sure. Charlotte and I, she just looks, she has this look with me. It's just like, please don't help me. I'll go to Dad. She just listens to him better. We also have a tutor who she absolutely adores. Mm. And like literally is like, can I just do my homework with Linda? And I'm like, well, I'm free. I don't cost anything. So can we try it with me first and then go to Linda, who is amazing. I wish she was like my second mom or my grandma. She's so great. She's not even old enough to be a grandma.
And what you're providing for Charlotte is really different experience. Like she gets to see you receive the help and she can benefit. Having a tutor is a great way to get some help, get some support.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, it really is. She's amazing. I mean, she's a retired teacher. And I'll tell you, I really wish she was I consider her my second mom. She doesn't know this. She might be listening. But if she is, I think of her as my second mom. Charlotte absolutely adores her. And also, she gives Charlotte gum while they're at the library doing their little tutor session. And Charlotte's like in heaven. She's like, Linda gave me gum. Like, did you learn anything? But I got the gum.
The old study trick is like you give yourself a shot of peppermint to get through.
Yeah, exactly. She is so funny. Linda, you know, gave me gum. Or Linda gave me an eraser. I'm like, you have 7,000 erasers at home. Didn't say boo. Linda gives you the same eraser. Linda's the greatest person in the world. We love Linda. Linda is, I just adore her. I absolutely adore her. But she's really helped us in that aspect. And she's a patience of a saint, you know, and David has the patience of a saint. He's just not around as much in nights and I have zero patience yet. I can go into someone's house and sit for 2 hours and literally separate like something that is so tedious. Kids, you know, plays toys or whatever doesn't even faze me. But if I have to like do something with Charlotte and she doesn't get it after the second time, I'm like in my head, like I'm going to run myself over right now. And I think, how do I have that in work? But it's just very interesting.
Probably the gum.
It's definitely the gum. Is this magic? I think it's like Trident. It's nothing even exciting. It's not like Hubba Bubba. It's not like, you know, watermelon. It's just basic gum. But Linda gave me gum. I'm like, you know, Linda really is amazing. The gum really helps too. So mom guilt. I want to say guilt. I feel like there's things I felt guilty about, I'm sure. But I feel like it's enhanced once I had Charlotte. I feel guilty about so many things. I feel guilty when I work, when she's on, and now that she's in school, when it was like preschool and stuff, and I would have to drop her off in like her little daycare, I would feel guilty about that because I was working, you know, and I have to work if I don't have that luxury. So I felt guilty about that. I feel guilty if we can't do all the things. Now that she's a little bit older and thankfully she is in school and I really try to sync up my schedule. David does the mornings and I try to do the afternoons, or not try to, most of the time, unless something comes up, or if I'm working a bigger project. But I feel guilty, like on her break. In a perfect world, at this age, I know it will change. I know our systems will change, but I would love to take her spring break off with her every day and just hang out with her. And I know that's not a reality, but if I can take like 2 days off, you know, I can do that. I'm okay with it. Mm-hmm. So I try to balance my guilt. I do. I feel guilty. I feel guilty if we can't go to all the stuff that, you know, people ask her to go to, or, you know, now she gets invited, you know, parties or play dates or, you know, now and it's not 100%, but most of the time it's like, you want to just drop Charlotte off for a little while. And, you know, and I'm like, oh my gosh, now I can go run errands and I can do that stuff with her. It's just not the same. It's not fun to run like errands, like grocery store and stuff with Charlotte because she's like looking for toys. And then after a while, she's like, are we almost done? I'm like, I haven't got anything I needed. So I feel guilty about that. You know, it's like, I feel guilty and I'm like, why? Where does this even come from? I don't understand. It's heightened more with her. I don't know.
But the guilt expands and then you lose the gratitude, right? And so it's different having an activity to do than a chore to do. And so offload the childcare so the chores get done and then do the activity and be so immersed in that, so present for that because your mind is clear and step into what is available.
Yeah. See, this is why you have this card. You have your business card. This is why. Because I try to do everything. You know what I mean? Like I try to, the pie piece, right? I slice that pie piece so thin. And like you said, take it at 2 hours, get the chores done because she went on a play date. I just have this guilt. I really don't know how to, I wish I didn't have it. I don't know if I noticed it before with other things mm-hmm. because it was just me. Mm-hmm. If I didn't want to go out with my friends, I didn't go out with my friends. If I feel like I'm letting her down, like I went to my mom's over the weekend. My mom's in San Diego. I went to my mom's for, you know, two full days, two nights, and she wanted to go with me. And I'm like, honey, you can go anytime with me to grandma's, but not now because you have school on Monday. I ended up going Sunday. And I'm like, you have school tomorrow. I'm not going to have you miss school to go to grandma's. And she was like so upset because she wanted it to be the three of us. And I was like, but next time. And she was like, well, can you FaceTime me when you get there? Can you FaceTime me? We'll do all those things. And, you know, and she just, and I felt guilty because I'm like, I kind of just want to hang out with my mom. I don't get to do that. Like my mom and I are very close. Just being me and my mom, I don't get to do that as often because if she comes up, Charlotte's on her like, you know, white on rice. And if I go down there, usually I take her because it's fun. We're down in San Diego, you know, but sometimes I like to just hang out with my mom. Like she likes to just hang out with me. And I felt so guilty. My mom even felt guilty. She's like, bring her and just have her miss school on Monday. I'm like, no, I want to go hang out with you and have my mom do my dishes or do my laundry and wash my dinner dish for me. Cause she's like, I'll get it. I'm like, really? Okay. Let me sit back and relax.
And you honor both the sides of the conflict. You want to be with your mom and have that grown up time. And you know, your child needs something special. And so less is more. And you know that from organizing.
I do.
And that's the skill set that we can sort of use, at times with relationships. And so instead of putting it at bay, we hold both, right?
Yeah. Yes, we do. Okay, let's take a quick break. Click the like, subscribe, or follow button on any platform that you're using, and that will give you notifications when the next episode drops. Now back to the show. So you mentioned something a little bit ago in the beginning of our conversation, a hot second. So you're on strike.
At the hospital. The social workers union is on strike.
But you're still working.
I still work in my private practice, but I have had to withhold my labor and not bring my services into the hospital.
And this has been going on for?
6 months.
Wow. And do you see a light at the end of that tunnel?
I am so hopeful that when we go back, we are going back empowered and with incremental progress to the changes we'd like to see to have an integrated healthcare system where there isn't a mental health system and a healthcare system. It's all healthcare and it's all high quality and it's all effective. That's the goal.
Now, when you go on strike for something, you know, I don't know how it works. I know with certain, there's certain rules, but is it a time you're going to be on strike for X amount of time? They tell you that in front, or is it just kind of as things aren't happening, you just continue to be on strike? How does that work?
So there's ways that labor can organize, and sometimes there's closed-ended strikes where you say, we're going on strike for 5 days, and then we'll come back. We remember in Los Angeles, the teachers had a closed-ended strike, and we all were scared about childcare for a week, and we worked it out, and they resolved the contract. And so sometimes that works as an escalation tactic. The strike I'm participating in is an open-ended strike, which means we won't come back to work until we have a fair contract.
And is there anything happening that is letting you know that that could happen soonish? Not yet.
So there are dates set to discuss with management.
Oh, good. Okay.
And so I'm hopeful that we will be back at work. I know our patients want us there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yes. And it's so important. Everything that you're doing is so important. Everything. And I do think, I don't know. And tell me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. So please tell me this. When you say bringing healthcare, the term healthcare and mental health together, right? Mm-hmm. Just make it one. Do you notice a different, like, do people like kind of shy away when you start talking about mental health versus just overall healthcare? Or do people, let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say men in general, but a lot of people, I sometimes feel like men say this, I will never see a shrink. Mm-hmm. I don't need that, mm-hmm. you know? Because they feel like it's something wrong with them. I don't want to say always, but mm-hmm. they don't want to talk to someone. We're fine. We don't need to talk to a couples mm-hmm. therapist, or we don't need to do this. Is it because they feel like it's a mental thing, or do they feel like if you just said, go to the doctor and sit and talk to your doctor? Like how does that work? And I kind of am all over the place because I don't really know. Do you feel that people separate the two, mental versus healthcare, and they make it kind of
stigma.
Like a stigma?
I think it is a stigma. And I think it's hard to talk to a physician about wellness and our medical care. And so in order to receive the help and care, we do have to allow ourselves to be vulnerable. And, you know, if you want to stay healthy, you don't avoid the doctor. You go in and you talk with them. You have your labs. You do all of that. And the same is true. If you want to have a thriving, healthy family relationship, relationship with work, you go and talk to somebody so that less can be more. And you're very available and very precise in all of the competing agendas, what you'd like to do. I mean, that really is... the organizing part that comes with individual therapy. And in medical systems, things get complicated really easy. There can be multiple diagnoses, multiple specialists. And so the service that I provide in the hospital is helping to be with a person in an environment that can be much more complicated than their day-to-day life. And that's in the hospital. Mm-hmm.
It just seems like, and again, this is my ignorance to mm-hmm. this, but I feel like a lot of times when the second that term like mental health mm-hmm. kind of pops up, you almost get like a little like a, and it's so beyond important. I am at everybody in the world, all of the issues, all of the things, we need to take care of people's mental health. But sometimes I feel like when you say that mm-hmm. word, people kind of like shy away and think like, oh, I don't need that. And you do. And mm-hmm. it's not a bad thing. It's please. Like, it took me a really long time to finally go talk to a therapist. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I'm my own therapist. When I was younger, mm-hmm. like, oh, I just fixed myself. Yeah, no, I didn't. There was something that happened and I needed help. And I went and I love it. I mean, I don't, you know what I mean? I love the idea of talking to someone, because we're not perfect. We're all imperfect people. My husband and I are two imperfect people that are together. And every once in a while, we're like, maybe we should go talk to somebody and kind of work through a couple things, mm-hmm. you know? I'm a big believer in it, but I know, I feel like men, I don't always want to say that, kind of shy away from it at first, like, mm-hmm. I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it in houses that I've gone to where the wife has told me, you know, and I'm like, oh, it's not a bad thing, you know? I mean, I think back in the day, but now it's just so necessary and everything is so different and you know, our mental health is it, and I've talked about it with my organizing. Mm-hmm. Like, you're cleaning out your mind. When you go in your house, you have a 50,000 freaking things in your brain every day. Mm-hmm. And everybody will tell me when I'm there, because I'm there, I'm sure they don't say it every time, but they're like, I come in and I can't deal with it. And I shut down or I don't know where to start and I just don't start, right? You close the door, mm-hmm. you pretend it doesn't exist. But once you see that your house is back to like a home and now all that shit's out of your head, that shit, you still have 500 other things in there, but it just helps you. And it's just, you asked for help. You asked for an extra set of hands. And it was, and I'm apt to doing that. But yet when someone offers it to me, like here I am, I'm always telling people, it's not embarrassing to ask for an extra set of hands. We all need it. But then if I go to say to somebody, oh, would you help me? And then I'm like, I'm not going to ask because they're going to, you know, and it's like, hello, that's what I do. I do this. I mean, I make it sound, I say that because I believe it's just an extra set of hands people need. I'm not going in there. Yeah, I can do some magic with some you know, crazy situations, but it's just asking for that help, you know, from me. But yet I have trouble doing it. And I'm like, oh, it's kind of interesting how you don't want to ask. Even my friends, my best friends, you know, there's certain things that I'm like, well, I didn't want to ask. Or they'll say, oh, I didn't want to tell you. And like, you know, it's like, that's what we're here for. That's what we do.
And in the hospital, we have access. We have ramps for people who need walkers or wheelchairs. Like, we make the building accessible for everybody at all levels. We want that built into all aspects of care. And so no matter what your needs are, there is a support that is there for you.
Now, at your office, what do you do differently at your office that isn't at the hospital or vice versa? Mm-hmm. Like what do you offer or what, you know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? I don't know. Do I know what I'm saying? I don't even know. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like what's different from when you're at the hospital dealing with the same and then you go into your office, what's not there or maybe what is there?
In a private practice, I have more time to sit with people and really nurture the relationship. In the hospital, that collapses because there's a crisis or an immediate urgent need that is happening. I'm a better provider in the hospital because I've taken the time to sit with people and see them through the fallout of problems.
Sure.
And I'm also a better provider, I think, in the room doing long-term work because I've also lived life and seen it being lived.
Yeah.
In the hospital. Yeah.
That's great. It's very fascinating to me. I could talk to you for 100,000 hours about it because I just love picking your brain.
I like that you have this curiosity about it, but I have a question for you.
Yes, please.
I want to know what's going on with your name.
Oh,
could you tell me?
Yes.
Give me an update because I have been following along and there is a French psychoanalyst and philosopher and he took a special interest in people's names, how they got their names, whether Ooh. They changed their names or not. And he felt like this was a story that contained a lot of meaningful information. And in my experience with people, it usually comes up when I'm talking to people. Usually they have some story about their name or a nickname they were given. And it's always great to hear. And I'm like wanting to know what is going on.
So I started when I was going to change my name. I told my husband on Valentine's Day as a, you know, thing. And then I found this company and it's called Newly Named. And just because it kind of gave me a checklist because I've never done it. And I've just heard like these horror stories. And it's funny you ask because yesterday I actually took the day off because finally I got my Social Security appointment yesterday. So I did it when I started talking about it, but I had to wait almost 2 months or like a month and a half. And I went and I had mentioned this before, but I always thought because I was like traumatized when I was in eighth grade of going to the Sacramento trip with my class and they took us to all these different things. But one of the places they took us to was the DMV. And I just felt like it was like a nightmare. It was like my worst hell. It was like, please just leave me there and torture me. We all sat there. We were staring at like the holes in the ceiling. And so I had this buildup yesterday because my appointment was like at 2 o'clock. And all I kept thinking is, oh my gosh, I made this appointment. It's going to be like going in the DMV and then you have to wait like an hour. It was a freaking breeze. It was amazing. First of all, the Social Security office was like 8 minutes from my house. Okay, fantastic. Didn't have to go very far. Fine. Clean as a whistle. It had a system. I already had an appointment. I checked in right when I got there. It gave me a number. I sat down. Who knew? There's 20 windows. Okay. It was busy, but it wasn't like crazy. There was a seat. I sat there for like six minutes. The lady called me. I was out in 3 minutes. 3 minutes. I had all this buildup yesterday. I was like, oh God, I brought a book. I brought a whole Trader Joe's. I love Trader Joe's big waters. I brought a whole water because I'm like, I'm always afraid I'm going to die of thirst. So I always have like 10,000 drinks. So I brought this water. I was there 3 minutes. I was carrying this water. I never even opened it. I was laughing. I got home and I was telling David, I'm like, so she said, I'm going to get my security or my new social security card in like basically 7 to 10 days. And then the ball will roll, meaning I send it off to all the places and my name's changed, but it is going to be changed on the card in 7 to 10 days.
That's great.
And I literally told her, she goes, okay, we're done. All I did was hand her my actual, you know, marriage certificate or marriage license, not the copy, because I got copies because they said to do that. And then my driver's license, 3 minutes. And I looked at her and I was like laughing. I'm like, I feel like I should sit here longer. And she's like, why? And I'm like, I thought this was going to take so long. I feel like, do you want to tell me anything? She's like, well, I had to eat my lunch really fast in order to take these appointments. I started laughing. Like,
I was here to wait. You could have taken your time.
I know, like, eat. But it was so funny because I got in the car and I was like, I'm going to come to the Social Security office all the time because the DMV to me is just doom and gloom.
This is why they have class trips there.
Oh, God.
Because it could be really great.
I was like, I remember we were like, why are we here? It was so traumatic. And that's how I associate the DMV. Just the most ridiculous, like, just unorganized thing. And I got there. I couldn't believe it. I literally want to, like, I want to write a review and say, wow. You know, I really did. So it's the ball's in motion. The ball is in motion. And David did ask me, he's like, do you want to, like, hyphenate your name? And I was like, no. And what's interesting, so my last name is Francis, and it will be Sattel, but my last name is Francis, and I never even thought about it. You know, I have no siblings, and I really have just, I don't have any, my family is just pretty much me and my mom, and because unfortunately, like most people have passed away, this, that, and the other, and I never really thought about it, but my, you know, obviously my dad, his last name is Francis. His family's, you know, is Francis. And I didn't really think about it because I always just thought I'd get married and change my name. But there was there's some reason or pause of why I didn't do it. And maybe it was just laziness. I don't know. Or maybe, but in the last couple months since I announced it, I was kind of thinking, like, I think I'm the last Francis. Like, because all of the, you know, grandkids, you know, all of the, on my dad's side, he only has one brother and he doesn't have any kids. And I'm the only child of my dad. My dad's still alive, but we're not very close. But with Charlotte in our life, it's definitely changed. But he has dementia, so he doesn't know who I am. So I kind of felt that in the last, like, since I said it on my very first podcast, I kind of was like, wow, like, it's not a big deal, but I'm getting rid of this name, you know? And it's like, I kind of had a moment. I don't have a moment with stuff with him. And I just kind of had a moment because the last time I did make an effort, you know, we took Charlotte because I knew his mental was, you know, I knew it was declining of memory and stuff. And we went about a year and a half ago and he didn't recognize me, which was a big shock. I didn't know that. And his wife did not know that. He won't talk about me. Because he still talks about me as a 5 or 6 year old little girl. And so she would just say, like, the same stuff, you know, or whatever. So when he didn't recognize me, she kind of looked at me like, oh shit, like she didn't know. I didn't know, but I didn't want to make a reaction. I didn't want to freak him out, you know. And later on, I processed that in my own way. But I did think about my last name and thinking, like, I don't necessarily want to keep it. I guess I didn't want to hyphenate it, but it was like, I might be the last Francis, because all the other, you know, there's not many others on his end with Francis. I know I'm a girl, but still, it's like, that's it, you know, and he doesn't even know, you know, he doesn't know either way what I'm doing. I did have a weird, like, in my head moment about it. And
so you're going to keep the Francis, or are you going to?
No, I'm going to go with Sattel, but I will say I thought about it for a hot minute. Like, maybe I just don't, or just keep it, or hyphenate it, or something. And then I'm like, you know, I'm going to go with Sattel. I feel like we're the Sattels and I'm just going to keep it that way. But there was a hot minute where I had a moment of like, what do I do? Like, do I do this for me? Do I do this for him? He doesn't know. It's, I don't know. It was just a weird thing. It was a weird moment. And it, you know, I talked to David about it and he's like, whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. He's like, you're a Satel. It doesn't, you know, and I was like, yeah, but I really wanted to change my name. I always wanted to change my name because we were not close. I didn't have that connection. But I guess when I saw that he didn't recognize me anymore, I was like, oh, well, that's like permanent. That's not going to change. And I'm laughing. I'm not laughing. I'm just like, oh, like that's permanent. He is never going to remember me again. Like, you know what I mean? There may be a moment. I don't see him that often. He lives, you know, a few hours away. And it's just not a situation I'm going to talk about right now. But I was like, that's it. That's the finality. And I didn't know if I was ready to do that. But I am. David's my he's my heart. And Charlotte's that. And it's just makes me happy. Yeah.
And how meaningful is that? Like, it can be jarring, the progression of someone's illness. But you allowed that to affirm you and who you are now and who you'll be in the future. You're Jennifer Satel.
Yeah, I'm Jennifer Satel. And when I think I might have mentioned this before, and if you I know you've been listening and supporting my podcast, which of course I appreciate and love, and I love talking to you. But one of the things I said, I think, is when I was 11 years old, because I've known David since fourth grade, and when I was 11 years old, my uncle, who helped raise me, my mom's brother, who's no longer with us, but he said one day, he's like, you're going to marry David Satel. And I said, disgusting. That's what I said when I was 11 years old. Probably with too much hairspray in my bangs, probably, you know, with crunchy hair. And I literally said, disgusting. And when David and I reconnected about 12 years ago now, right around 12 years, maybe almost 13. And I told him the story as we had, you know, we realized that we were actually going to be dating and whatever we were doing. And he was laughing so hard. He's like, because he loved my uncle. My uncle was, David came over a lot and did stuff with us. So it was definitely a relationship. But he's like, I never would have thought, you know, it's just like, and I'm like, my uncle had just within 6 months had passed away. I'm like, he would have died if he knew that David and I were together. And then we had a child. Like, it's just, and everyone's like, oh, he knows. And
he knew it all along.
He knew it before. He had a crystal ball or something. It was just kind of a funny story. And it's kind of, that's the part that makes me want to keep it. You know, I think that's, or change it, you know, to his name. And it's just, maybe it was in the cards for us all along. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's just weird how the universe works. But I remember him saying that to me, like just pulling me aside. And they were probably out. We were all out swimming or something. He's like, you're going to marry David Satel. And I was like, disgusting. And now I'm like, oh, my God, I'm the luckiest person. You know, it's just it's very funny.
Jennifer, are you a millennial?
No.
You're Gen X.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Gen X, not a millennial.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not a millennial. No. Are you? You're Gen X.
I am a Gen Xer.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of at the last of it.
No, I'm in it. I'm in the trenches.
And so my younger sibling and cousins, they're millennials. So I feel like I was an ambassador.
Yes, sure.
into it. But, you know, it's cool that you are starting a podcast and that during the pandemic, I think you had a more millennial experience of opening yourself up, getting savvy with the media, like working it out.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yes. I mean, but I'm definitely I'm not a millennial, but I mean, yes, there are some things. Yes. Yes to everything. Let me ask you this as mm-hmm. our last and final question of the day. In a nutshell.
Yeah.
Can you do a nutshell of this topic, do you think?
Depends on what it is, but I'm going to try.
Okay. So tell me about community organizing and home organizing, the gist of it.
Right.
Or what's the takeaway from the difference and how it applies, how it is parallel.
Right.
Just kind of give me your thing. I did some research mm-hmm. on it too, but I'm very, mm-hmm. I don't know.
So I'm just going to whittle it down to labor.
Yeah.
And I think really just like home organizing, you have to start with a small little piece that is manageable. You can't eat the elephant like in one meal. You got to sit down and take tiny bites. And, you know, I've seen momentum in the hospital building for the 10 years that I worked there towards what is happening now. And there's fractions that happen and there's irritations, but you can't let that miss you, like lose the prize. You know, you got to keep focused on what the goal is.
Those bite-sized pieces, that's what I tell people too. Yeah. And, it, you know, like in a different capacity, but they walk in, they see this whole shit box of a house that maybe there's a million reasons of why it's like that, and that's okay. But I'm like, don't look at the big. Let's look at one drawer, one cabinet, you know, whatever. Because if you do it, and I'm sure with that, it's taking you 10 years, you see this progress, but in your brain, like probably 10 years ago, you're like, it's snap your fingers and it's going to happen, and you realize it's not, and there's steps to it and processes. And sometimes we don't have the bandwidth to do it all. Like, so there are some houses I go to and I think, oh my gosh, they're, and you can tell that they've reached out to me, right? I'm threshold. They've hit the threshold. They're ready. They want help. But then they paralyze and they freeze and they stop. I'm like, let's just do this one section today. Or some people will say to me, and it may, again, it's, I'm using my experience because I'm not educated on your side of it. But they'll be like, let's do 8 to 10 hours on the first day because this house is, you know, this, it's, or I, and I was like, let's do 3 to 4 hours because you will get exhausted. And especially someone who wants to be involved. And as, you know, as with purging, purging a million things, purge your life, purge your mind, purge whatever, you know, they're going through stuff. It's emotional, you know? So it's like with other, you know, with what you're doing too, there's emotion, there's steps, there's processes, there's mapping it out. I'm sure you have to map out community stuff. You don't just go in there and go, okay, this is what we're going to do. You have to map every step and everything. And it's not all going to happen instantaneously, and that's okay. And it's, right? Am I on the right track?
Exactly. And I think building a business too, or building a brand, or building a podcast, it's, we get the impression, because so much of the labor is hidden from us, that it just is, a manicured presentation, but it's gritty. It's really hard work.
You're in the trenches, man.
That's right.
And you are definitely in the trenches. I'm in the, I don't know, like maybe a little pod in the corner. You're like deep in the trenches. You have like a helmet on and you're in there. You're trying to help the world. You're trying to help the community. You're trying to help. I'm trying to help like a house at a time, which is still great. And I'm not taking any light of it, but your stuff is pretty, you're in there.
And who lives in those houses? It's people who go out in the world and put on their helmet.
yes. To get different capacities. Done. Yes, absolutely. On that note, I am gonna say that we're gonna wrap up today.
But thank you so much. But it was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. And I want you to tell people however you want to, how can they reach out to you? How can they, I'll put your link obviously on our podcast if anyone is interested in reaching out to you, but just verbally, like how do they reach out to you? Is there a website? Is there whatever? You tell me.
Yes. So come to my website. It's garyconnell.com, GarieConnell.com. And there's links to all the socials, including a blog that I write on Medium, which is Gary Poppins is my blog. And that is all the information about our labor efforts and organizing in the hospital and what people can do to get involved or support us or help. And I appreciate the chance to talk about it. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. I loved having you. We'll definitely be talking again. There is always stuff to talk about. Please reach out to me if you missed what she said and you want to reach out to her. I love supporting moms. I love supporting businesses, and she is amazing. And if anybody needs her help, guidance, anything, please, if you can't get a hold of her, reach out to me and I'll give you her information. So thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening. You guys know I absolutely appreciate another episode. I love talking to people and I love hearing feedback from you. Also, in order for you to know about these new episodes, please like, subscribe, follow, all of the things that I say. And if you have any questions, you want to ever use my services, initspropereplace.com is a great way to do that. Thank you so much, and I look forward to the next episode. That's a wrap on today's episode of Unpacking with Jennifer. I hope you're walking away with a little inspiration and a few practical tips to make life at home just a little bit easier. If you love the episode, be sure to subscribe so you never miss a new one. And if you found it helpful, I'd love if you left a quick review. It helps more moms like us find the show. Let's keep the conversation going. You can find me on social media at @Jennifer_Sattell for more organizing tips, behind-the-scenes moments, and a whole lot of real life. Until the next time, take a deep breath, give yourself some grace, and keep unpacking what matters most. This episode was engineered by Robert Altshuler. Music by Coldfire. Recorded and mixed at Command Recording Studios.